When the mare had eaten her fill, Dietrich turned her toward the shade of the great wood. There was a stream there, he remembered, where the horse could drink, and the canopy would be relief against the awful heat. He had not entered the wood since the crankish vessel's departure, and the expression of summer foliage had altered its aspect considerably. The woods masters and wild roses suffused the air with their fragrances, bees hummed, new growth had obscured many of the blazes that Max had cut. Yet the horse seemed purposeful. Dietrich supposed that she smelled the water and gave her free rein. Unseen creatures bolted from their path, disturbing the shrubs and the hazel. A blue-winged tail-mouse watched his progress for a space before flying off. Petrarch, it was said, found peace in nature, and had once climbed Mount Vento near Avignon for no reason but the prospect from its summit. Perhaps the savagery of his writings, his distortions and libels, owed something to his love of savage places. Dietrich came upon the clearing where the stream pooled before completing its rush down the mountainside. The horse dipped her head and began to drink, and Dietrich, reflecting that he too would grow thirsty on the road, dismounted, and hobbling the mare with a hippopede, walked upstream a few paces to drink. A stone fell into the pool, and Dietrich leapt back. Above him, upon a projecting ledge where the water tumbled into the pool, sat Heloise Krenkerin. Dietrich awoke his head harness. "Greet God," he told the other through the private canal. The Krenkerin reached to the side and slung another stone into the pool. "Greet God," she said. "I thought your kind avoided these forests." "They are fearful places," Dietrich agreed. "What brings you here?"
"My folk find quiet inside the head in places like this. It has." "What is your word?"
"Maze. Balance."
"Arnold used to sit there so," Dietrich said. "I spied him once."
"Did you?" "He too was of the great isle."
She threw another stone into the pond, refreshing ripples that had begun to subside. Dietrich waited, but she said no more until he turned to go.
"When you stand still," Heloise said, "you seem to vanish. I know that is the way our eyes are fashioned," and the wolf tried to explain how yours were different, "but he is only one who labors with machines for physicians, and not a physician himself." She tossed another stone. "But that makes naught."
The stone struck directly in the center of the fading ripples, and Dietrich thought that each of her tosses had struck precisely the same spot. Was it the motion of the water that drew her aim? Humans gauged distance more exactly than Krenkerin, but Krenkerin gauged motion more exactly. Thus, God assigned to each folk gifts suitable to their being.
"How fares Ulf?" the Krenkerin asked. "Shows he the spots?"
And she extended her arm so that Dietrich could see the dark green mottling that presaged the strange starvation of his guests. "Not that I have seen." She ran a finger around a large blemish.
"Tell me, is it better to die quickly or slowly?"
Dietrich looked down while he scuffled the dirt with his foot. "All beings seek naturally to live, so death is an evil never to be sought for its own sake. But all beings seek also to avoid pain and terror. As to die quickly lessens these, a quick death is therefore, if not a good, at least a lesser defect of the good. But a quick death gives also no chance for repentance and expiation to those one has wronged. So a slower death may also be thought a lesser evil."
"It is true what is said of you."
A fifth stone followed the others.
"The wolf stayed because Hans asked for his particular skills, and he obeyed as if Hans had been a one set above."
"Is that what he told you?"
"I could not leave him. Yet each day I smell my death step closer."
"That is not right. Death ought to swoop like your hawk, not stalk like your wolf."
"So it was, so it is."
"Death is but a doorway to another life," Dietrich assured her.
"Is it?" And our Herr Jesus Christ is the gate.
And how pass I through this gate that is a man?
Your hand is already on the latch. The way is love, and you have shown that already by your acts.
So also had her husband. It wondered Dietrich, as he returned to his horse, that both had stayed, because each believed the other would. Thus does one turn from care, because it is a duty, to duty because one cares.
He stepped into the stirrup and seated himself. "Come to me when you return to the village," he said, "and we will talk." With that he tugged the reins and headed the gray toward the trail. The horse had indeed been a sign, and a miracle as well. The sign had been to lead him here so that God might gently admonish him through the mandibles of a stranger. The cup would pass from Heloise no more than it had passed from the Son of Man in the garden. So what presumption it was to think that it could pass from him.
"Lord," he prayed,
"when did I see you sick or in distress and fail to comfort you?"
He leaned forward and stroked the horse's head, and she gave him a whicker of pleasure.
"You are a miraculous horse," he told her, for God had permitted her to come into the presence of a crinkle without panic.
Along the way back, he said a prayer for the repose of the soul of Father Rudolph. God had presented Dietrich the means of flight, and with it, a warning of the rewards awaiting flight. The horror built much like a rainstorm. First a few, then a period of quiet when folk believed the menace passed, then a few more, until at last a torrent. Folk cowered in their homes. In the fields, crops rotted and hay wilted unscythed. A few joined Dietrich and the Krenken at the hospital. Joachim, when he had recovered from his stripes, but also Gregor Mauer, Klaus Müller, Gerda Becher, Luther Holzacker. Theresia Gresch labored over her herbs, preparing those that eased pain or induced sleep, though she would not enter the smithy. Gottfried had dedicated the hospital to St. Lawrence, though Dietrich suspected that he meant the late smith, not Sixtus Deacon. Having been told by Dietrich of the knights of the hospital, the creature took to wearing a surcoat with the cross of the order blazoned on the upper left. Folk sickened slowly and suddenly, from coughing fits and boils. Herwig One Eye seemed to blacken before Dietrich's horrified gaze, as if a shadow had passed across his soul. Marcus Becher lingered, like Everard, in agony and convulsions. Volkmar Bauer's entire family perished, his wife Seppel, even Ulrika and her newborn babe. Only the Vogt himself lived, and he precariously. Days fell together. Margaret of Antioch, Mary Magdalene, Apollinaris, James the Greater, Bertolt of Gaston. Losing track of the feasts, Dietrich celebrated unnamed ferial days. Burials brought people out. Marcus Becher, Conrad Feldman, and both his girls. Rudy Forzheimer, Gerda Becher, Trude and Peter Metzger. At each death, Dietrich rang the church bell. Once for a child, twice for a woman, thrice to signify a man. Who would hear, he wondered. He imagined the peals drifting ever fainter over a landscape devoid of life. The churchyard filled, and they dug graves in fresh ground that Dietrich consecrated irregularly. Again and again Dietrich told himself not all die. Paris lived, and Avignon. Even in Niederhochwald a handful had survived. Hilda seemed to grow better, and little Gregor, and even Volkmar Bauer. Reinhard Bent would steal no more furrows from his neighbors, nor Petronella Lerm glean the hare's fields. Folk's woman Constance died in the sudden fashion. Melchior Metzer led a delirious Nicol Langermann to the hospital. "It isn't fair," the young man said, as if blaming Dietrich. "He had the murrain and he grew well. Why strike him this second time?"
"There is no why," Hans answered from the bedside of Franz Ambach. "There is only how, and that no one knows."
Ulf had been working with a device that magnified very small things, by which Dietrich had named it Microscopion. Through this, Ulf had studied the blood of both the stricken and the hale. One day, when Dietrich had come to the parsonage to wake Joachim for his turn in the hospice, Ulf showed them on the image slate numberless black flecks of varied shapes and sizes, like dust motes caught in a beam of sunlight. Ulf indicated one particular curl.
This one never appears in Hale blood, but always in those stricken.
What is it? Joachim asked, only half awake.
The enemy.
But it was one thing to know the face of the enemy, and quite another to slay him.
Arnold Krenk might have succeeded, or so Ulf said. Yet we have not his skills. We can but proof a man's blood, and say if the enemy is present within him.